Furman is with OutKick and also BetTheBoardPodcast.com. He's on the Pepsi Hotline. Todd Furman, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing very well this morning, gentlemen. How are you boys holding up?
Doing great. Thanks a lot. This SEC championship game, I think the first time we started asking you about it, you thought it would be around 3. It has done nothing but climb since that time, and it finally hit the market much higher than 3. Where do you think the game will actually go off?
Yeah, the more data points you have and you realize some of Alabama's struggles, oddsmakers' hands were forced with this particular number to keep driving it further with close calls against the likes of LSU, Arkansas, and Auburn down the stretch. And here we sit with that number sitting 6, 6.5, depending on the shop. I think you're going to get some books that cater more to recreational bettors that may go as high as 7 to try and see if they can get a bet back on the underdog. From an X's and O's standpoint, of course, the biggest question, and it's not telling Alabama fans anything they don't already know, can their offensive line hold up in the trenches against this Georgia defensive front that isn't overly complex, but it's loaded with 4- and 5-star athletes there. I think the real matchup, though, that'll determine who ultimately wins and covers, what does this Georgia offense led by Stetson Bennett look like against an Alabama defense that's kind of flown under the radar for stretches because so much of the attention is paid to Bryce Young and company?
You know, Furman, typically I'm a guy that won't bet a money line. And, you know, if it's over 4 or 5, I just really don't take those shots. But if it's around 3, sometimes I'll just play the dog outright. Is this a situation where I think Alabama's plus 200 on the money line? If you're going to play Bama, would you take a shot at just taking a live dog?
Well, I mean, for me, when it comes to betting, if I'm going to take an underdog in both the NFL and college, I'm always going to have a little bit in terms of money line value and exposure. So you get a game like North Texas, for example, last week in the land, it can offset a lot of your other missteps throughout the season. I'm not going to have a position on this game, but I can understand why people may want to take a shot on Alabama. It's going to be uncharted territory as far as Nick Saban catching this many points against a program that he's really had ownership of in the last 6 meetings. And the other narrative that's starting to creep into some of the dialogue, and I've talked to some folks in the industry, they're trying to figure out if you're going to get a Georgia team that's as desperate to make a statement and get a win here as Alabama, who knows a loss probably removes them from the college playoff discussion, where Georgia would more or less have a mulligan even if they stubbed their toe on Saturday.
I'm more interested in the total. You know, who wins the game may be already a foregone conclusion. Do you see this under a 50 or is it over a 50?
It's always a fast track at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, so it's tricky to go under, but for me, that's the only way to look. I think you're talking about an Alabama defense that's a little bit underrated. We know how stout Georgia can be there. The one concern I do have, though, will Georgia and Todd Monken be able and willing to break tendency early? Could we see a scenario where they allow Stetson Bennett to throw early to set up the run? And then when you look at an under bet, you always want two teams that can stay committed to the ground game. With Alabama, some major concerns if they're even going to try and run the ball at all. So that would be the only hesitation, but you're not going to get me to the window going over the current number, 49.5.
Todd Furman is with us. He appears on the Pepsi Hotline. You can see more with him at OutKick.com and at OutKick on Twitter. Also, BetTheBoardPodcast.com is what you need to download for Furman, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. Oak State and Baylor, we've already seen once this year a 10-point game before. What has changed in these two teams? Because, and I know you wouldn't set the line at 10 just because we saw this, but it's at 5.5 right now with Oklahoma State favored. I feel like Baylor's a better team now than they were then.
They definitely are, but I think Oklahoma State is as well. And that number, when we saw the game take place in Stillwater, Oklahoma State scored a late touchdown to extend what was a 3-point margin out to 10. They closed in that 3.5-4 range, so you're already seeing the market give Oklahoma State a lot more credit for their body of work down the stretch than Baylor. The big question with the Bears is what we're going to get from their quarterback position. Will it be Blake Shapen, who I think is going to be the starting quarterback, or could we see Gary Bohannon, who's dealt with a little bit of a hamstring injury? Shapen more of a pocket passer, although he has shown an ability to take off from the pocket when things break down around him. But the big concern I have with Baylor, can they shore up that secondary that almost cost them last week against Texas Tech, where they gave up a few explosive plays over the top? Meanwhile, for Oklahoma State, they're going to do what they've done all season long, and that's sell out to stop the run. If Baylor's not able to establish Smith and Ebner on the ground, do they have a secondary punch? And quite frankly, I like what I've seen from Oklahoma State and Spencer Sanders, but the problem I have here laying the points with Oklahoma State, Mike Gundy referenced it in some of his comments already this week, they're not going to be able to replicate the energy and the effort potentially that they showed against Oklahoma. I like this game under the total a bit.
FedEx guy is at the door, Furman. You may need to go get the door.
Yeah, apparently. certainly. You know, it's amazing. As you guys know, the girlfriend leaves town, or I should say the fiance leaves town, and I have to deal with the onslaught of Amazon packages. We're buying gifts for people I didn't know even existed, but apparently that's how things work in a healthy relationship.
Hey, so not only has Michigan put themselves in a situation to get into a college football playoff for the first time, so they've won a lot of games. They're also covering at a great number. I mean, they're 8-2 against the number this year. And it looks like a situation where laying the 10.5, the public's going to be all over Iowa. Is this one of those lay it or don't play it?
It's so interesting because you wonder again about Michigan being able to recreate that same environment, that atmosphere, that emotion that carried them to the outright win against Ohio State last week, and arguably the biggest that Coach Harbaugh has been able to accomplish. And to even suggest there could be a letdown in a game of this magnitude, it's so hard to quantify. From a number standpoint, I can tell you we made this number closer to 2 touchdowns. So if you're looking to make a case for Michigan, I understand completely. And the crazy part about this Michigan team that's kind of flown under the radar this year, it's actually been an extremely dynamic offense. They're not relying on the same playmakers week in, week out. I mean, you get Hassan Haskins with 5 touchdowns in the win against Ohio State. The week before, it's Donovan Edwards catching 10 balls out of the backfield for 170 yards. So when I look at Iowa, this team has been a lot of smoke and mirrors. They really struggle offensively, but we've seen Kirk Ferentz's teams raise their level of play and be very good on the defensive side. As it stands right now, I can't make a case either way. I'm just not sure I want to suffer through 3.5 hours of watching Iowa play meaningful football.
There's a portion of America, and it may include my seat, that'll be cheering for the Houston Cougars this weekend against Cincinnati, just to make it simpler for the selection committee. Does the Cougs have a chance against Cincinnati?
I honestly don't think so. When you look at Cincinnati over the last couple of weeks, ever since people said they needed those style points and they struggled against the likes of Tulsa and South Florida, they've reminded us how good they can be defensively. They completely shut down SMU 2 weeks ago. They were very good on the defensive side of the ball as well in their win in Greenville last week against East Carolina. And when you look at Cincinnati, the way to beat them this year has been actually running the football. Unfortunately for Houston, from an EPA standpoint and a lot of other efficiency metrics, they haven't been that stout with Alton McCaskill. I think they're going to get bullied at the line of scrimmage. And when you have a team that relies so heavily on one player like the Cougars do with Nathaniel Dell and his 70-plus catches, Sauce Gardner could find his way to him, matching up, you know, nearly every single offensive snap. I think Desmond Ridder and company do enough offensively, and in a game where I think the defenses can have their way, I actually lean towards the favorite despite the number coming down. I get the feeling Cincinnati's been a little bit undervalued over the last couple weeks.
Todd Furman is with us, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. He is also with OutKick, and he is on the Pepsi Hotline. I wanted to go Heisman with you, Furman. Obviously, going into last week, C.J. Stroud, you said, was a fairly considerable favorite. I think I saw where it flipped back to Bryce Young. How do you evaluate this thing with Stroud sidelined and Young with another game here?
Yeah, it did indeed move that way, and I might be a little bitter and jaded as someone who's sitting on a 30-1 ticket with C.J. Stroud, thinking he got a unfair shake because the defense couldn't do what they needed to, but Bryce Young gets full marks for that incredible drive he put together at Jordan-Hare despite an otherwise uninspiring performance. He's right now the 220 favorite, so you'd have to put up $2.20 to make a dollar. C.J. Stroud right behind him at 9-2, and that's where things start to get interesting with a tandem of players in the next quartet, and Aiden Hutchinson and Kenny Pickett, who may have a chance to make another statement game along with Bryce Young over the weekend. Matt Corral and Kenneth Walker have been nice stories, but I don't think there's enough data to support what they're going to do. So I think it's Bryce Young's award to lose. It's just a question of how much luster could be off of him if Georgia were to go out there and absolutely obliterate Alabama this weekend.
Hey, completely off the board here. Is it just me, or is it impossible to handicap the NBA right now?
The NBA is always a little bit more challenging. Typically for me, NBA season doesn't really start until Christmas time. But the one thing I can say is a lot of these injury moves with players being ruled out, whether it's COVID situations or anything else, have not come home to roost. I think the perfect illustration last night, you see the Lakers end up taking a ton of money against them. They put together a huge second half. And for the NBA, it's so much about identifying those spots and trying to pick 5 to 7 games a week, maybe more so than getting involved in the nightly grind. But it is no doubt the most volatile of the professional sports when you look to try and identify your edge night to night.
As we get ready for an NFL weekend, there's some players that won't play for Dallas. Thursday night, we got the Cowboys and the Saints. The Cowboys, I tabbed them as the best team in the NFC a few weeks ago. I think they've lost three or four since. Where's this Cowboy team? Where's the desperation? Can they win in New Orleans limited?
You know, I think it's a great question when you try and figure out what Dallas is going to give you on a week-in, week-out basis. The Thanksgiving game, a little bit more of an anomaly. We know about the countless flags thrown on Anthony Brown in critical third-down situations. The Cowboys clearly were a little bit undermanned without CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper, but you begin to wonder what the ground game will look like if Ezekiel Elliott is going to have his workload limited. Going down to New Orleans can always be a tough place to play, but this is a Saints team really desperate to try and find an identity that they haven't at the quarterback position. We know Taysom Hill will take some reps there. Mike McCarthy, of course, won't be calling plays for the Cowboys on the offensive side. It'll fall all on Kellen Moore's shoulders. I like this game under the total a bit, but I still think Dallas is the most talented team in the NFC East. I think they'll ultimately get healthy. And when you're trying to figure out the pecking order in the NFC from top to bottom, for me, it's Tampa number one, Green Bay number two, and then a drop-off. And that drop would include the Arizona Cardinals, just because of my skepticism around Cliff Kingsbury in a win-or-go-home type scenario in the postseason.
All right, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. Outkick at Todd Furman is where you go to follow Furman. Thank you so much for the time, Todd. Always great talking with you.
Always a pleasure. And LT, good luck trying to figure out the Rubik's Cube that is the National Basketball Association.
Staying away from it, man.
Stay away. Thank you, Furman.
Discretion, the better source of valor, Jets. I'll talk to you next week.
See you, Furman, with us on the Pepsi Hotline.